This is Seth Bell with the Kansas City Soccer Journal. I'm going to say this is an episode of Keeping Current with Kansas City, even though it'll be a little bit more than just Kansas City. With me, I have a special guest, Anna Witte. Is that the right way to say it?
It is. You got it.
I'm always worried. Everybody has a little different pronunciation. So,
no, you nailed it.
All right. I met Anna a couple years ago at the soccer coaches convention. It was in Kansas City. And we kind of become friends, and we've conversed every once in a while and all that stuff. But she knows the NWSL and a lot of other soccer. You were a college player and you were a broadcaster now. Just what else would you like the people to know about you?
Yeah, no, that's basically it. I would say I'm a broadcaster because underneath that umbrella, I feel like I do so much in the world of soccer and just sports in general. I call soccer, especially the NWSL, as an analyst. I can do play-by-play. I love doing sideline reporting for hoops and for football as well. But I also love the social media aspect and the TikTok, the Instagram, and kind of getting into the behind the scenes of all that. So I love touching a little bit of everything, especially in the soccer world. So broadcaster definitely encompasses it all, for sure.
Well, because I've enjoyed sitting and talking soccer. Again, we've mostly talked NWSL, but soccer in general. I know you moved to a new area. Are you kind of getting into like any new teams over there?
Oh, you know, just Charlotte FC in my backyard. Well, yeah. So they made it to the wild card game. And that was extremely exciting. And I actually was here a few weeks ago when Messi came into town, and I almost bought the $68 like nosebleed ticket. But I was like, there's no way he's playing. He's not going to play on this turf. It's the final game of Inter Miami season. Just no way. And of course he played and I wasn't there. But no, I certainly have really enjoyed following them and getting into that fandom. They have such great fans here. And also the League One level, the Charlotte Independence, the NCFC over in Raleigh are both in the finals. So there's a lot of soccer here in the Carolinas. And one of the reasons that I really moved back, I'm originally from Cary, North Carolina. And there's just so much going on in this state when it comes to the youth level. Collegiately, there's a lot of great colleges, and then obviously at the professional level as well. So yeah, I love Charlotte. It's a great town.
Yeah, that whole area is great with soccer. That's I've been very happy in Kansas City with Sporting Kansas City, FCKC, now the current, the indoor team and minor league teams and colleges and stuff, but not quite at the level of some of that out there. So I'm kind of jealous that you have that many different things to watch and follow and report on.
Yeah, no, it's really fun. I will say, you know, with Charlotte FC being in its second year, it's going to be really exciting to see its growth. Like, you're in a position where with Sporting KC, it's been around for a long time. There's been a lot of consistencies, and I think it's cool to see the growth of Charlotte FC, the fandom, what kind of fans are attracted to soccer and MLS in particular. So yeah, I think it's great. I mean, we also have the Panthers, we have the Hornets, we have a lot of really good college hoops in this area as well. And obviously our Panthers aren't that good this season. Our Hornets haven't been good historically. I mean, you guys had the Chiefs, so I shouldn't even be talking about NFL.
Yes, yeah, I don't think I'm allowed to talk NFL. I think I'd have to pay a bribe or something to be allowed to talk about that.
Yeah, no, so many good storylines in that league. But soccer, football in general is just really great in this town. And like I said, it's the reason I moved back, for sure. One of the reasons.
My one end to talk about the NFL, though, is, you know, Mahomes is like an owner of everything. So,
right.
And him and his wife, part owners in the current, and yeah, and him part owners in Sporting KC and the Royals. So, and I think he really owns the Chiefs. Nobody just knows it yet.
I'm sure he does. I'm sure it's on his list of things to do. If he doesn't, Brittany probably does.
Yeah.
He's smart. He's been really smart with his money. But it's, and like to your point, it's been fun to see how people have become attracted to the NWSL just based off of different owners.
Yep. It is. Yeah, that has been a big attraction, and it's kind of a new thing with the NWSL is attracting those celebrity owners that then bring in a few additional fans and that crossover.
Totally. You see it in Angel City. I've been able to go to a few of those games in the past few seasons, their first 2 years, I guess. And it's really fun to see like the energy, how the owners get involved and how that's bringing in so many different fans in the LA area.
Yeah, they didn't make it out of their first round of the playoffs, though, did they?
No, they didn't. But I really like what they have building over there, you know, with Becky Tweed now returning. I think they've got something brewing for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. Kind of going to one of the original reasons I brought you on was to talk about Kansas City, though. And because you've covered Kansas City current games and a lot of NWSL games. Kind of let's kind of look back at the year. What did you see go wrong for Kansas City?
Biggest thing that probably went wrong for Kansas City is the amount of injuries that they had. You look at Morgan Gautreaux, Vanessa DiBernardo, there was Dabinia out for periods. I think Kristen Hamilton was out for a good bit as well. And there was that changing of the back line, which was probably the biggest thing that happened to this Kansas City side that put them in that position to not towards the end, not be able to push through. I think you talk about their center backs, and with Robinson sliding in, there was another center back as well. I forget who she is off the top of my head, but she slid into those defensive roles. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, early on when they had Elizabeth Ball out, they brought in Croy Soto. So you had two rookies, one of them not even drafted, starting center back.
Right. So I think just the mix of that and then bringing in an interim head coach after Matt Potter got fired, I think there was just so much that happened off the field, on the field, with injuries and with changes that are very hard to do. And then you throw in the World Cup and so many different changes that are really hard to break out of, and Kansas City just wasn't able to repeat what they did the year prior.
When Potter was in charge, he was a bit more defensive and more, you know, countering kind of coach. And Caroline Werblum was more wanted to be more possession and, you know, good attacking. How much do you think that maybe played into that difficulty of changing styles?
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair question. I would say it's a good bit. I would say it was a little bit of the change. And I think maybe it's not even the style, but a different approach and a different head coach and somebody who wants them to play, like you said, in a different style. And then as soon as Werblum came in, we started to see those injuries slowly but surely trickle into the team. So not only was it a wholesale style change to an extent, but it was also now they were having to shift players maybe into positions that they normally don't play, playing next to players that they normally don't play with. And it put them in a position where it was a growing year, a year that they had to build, a year that they had to adapt and learn. And I think honestly for Kansas City, you know, you look at some of the negatives. Yeah, they didn't get the results. They ended at the bottom of the table this year. There was so much individual growth. And I think growth as a team, now that they have a new head coach and they have a direction and they have somebody that they think will be consistent and steady with them for the foreseeable future with this club, I think it kind of relieves these players and lets them relax a little bit. You also look at the age too. There's a lot of young players on this Kansas City team, and it comes to a point where there's a lot outside of just soccer. And I think that's kind of what happened this year.
Another injury that neither one of us mentioned earlier was Alex Loera.
Yes.
She was, you know, consistently being a six last year, and she was without Desiree Scott there. She was needed as a six this year, and she was out for quite a while too.
Right. And Alex Loera, that's funny you bring that up, because I actually called Santa Clara's game against Gonzaga this past weekend, and we were talking to her former head coach at Santa Clara, and he was making a comparison to another center back that he currently has there and saying when Loera was a player at Santa Clara, she wanted to be a midfielder, and then they drifted her back into the center back role. She did not want to play there at all. They moved her back up into the midfield, and then they lost. And she was like, okay, I understand that you want me in that center back role. So it shows that she has that ability to play both positions, but then she gets injured and she can't slide back into that center back role, which they really needed her in.
Yep.
So yeah, that was a huge loss for them this year.
Yeah. She's very versatile in that, and she can play either. I know she likes the midfield better, and she's been one of the strengths with, you know, picking out player, you know, those long passes to switch to the wing, or, you know, slide it through to the forward. And she's really good at that. I never want to be biased, but she's one of my favorite players in the NWSL right now.
Yeah, I could totally see why you enjoy watching her play. And not only is she good at switching the point of attack, she has this steadiness and this calmness, especially in her second season. You could kind of see that when she did come back onto the field towards the end of the year. She had been through so much. She had experienced the NWSL already, and she understood the role really well that they were asking her to play. So for her, she has an extremely high ceiling in that role. It was just, again, another bummer and another player that you don't want to see get injured in a year that you already have so much chaos going on.
Yeah, I don't want to turn this into a Loera show, but she was also a little more mature than some of the rookies coming out of college, because she got an extra year in college,
right,
for Santa Clara with the whole COVID years. So.
Right, right, exactly.
Speaking of the transition that's facing the Current, like you said, they now have a new coach, Vlatko Ananovsky, Kansas City resident, guy I've known for a long time before FCKC days. Obviously, he's got experience in the NWSL in those first few years, and now is coming back to it after a not quite successful stint at the national team coach. What do you see that he can bring, and what does he need to accomplish?
I think Ananovsky is going to be excellent for Kansas City. First, his experience in knowing the town of Kansas City. He knows the soccer in that area. He's comfortable in that area. His family is there. He's not going to have to be doing as much travel as he was doing with the national team. And the biggest thing that stood out to me in his press conference was he said he wants to be a part of the day-to-day. When you're a national team head coach, you are essentially just a recruiter, constantly watching the players that you have recruited. You're traveling to games often, and that's a lot. And those are two very different things, and you don't see it in other sports at all, really. And it's a hard transition. So I think for him, he got a lot of flack after the World Cup, and some of it probably was rightly so, that he did deserve it because he's the head coach and he did do a good job of shouldering that and having good responses. But I also think too, you look at the U.S. national team play in their recent friendlies against Colombia. They didn't play well. I think there's a bigger story there. It can't just be his fault. And I thought it was really interesting when players started coming out and kind of slightly throwing a little bit of jabs at him, if you know what I'm saying. He didn't say anything. He didn't come out, and he just let it happen, and now he's back in the NWSL. That, to me, is a coach that you can really respect and takes his job and his role extremely seriously. I think he's going to be good on 1v1 relationships, like really good at developing players, encouraging them. It's a young team, and that's what they need as well. His tactics are so strong. I mean, he's shown that he understands the game, especially this league. It's changed since 2019 and when he was here. But all that to say, I think he still has a really good opportunity just to prove that. Hopefully, you know, over the next few years, this club could get healthy. But I'm really excited. And I also think, too, Kansas City's a club where they're growing off the field as well. He is a name in this sport that everybody knows, and he has that in his back pocket as well to kind of grow soccer in your backyard.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to him being back. And again, I liked Caroline Werbloom. I'm just going to call it Caroline.
It's a tricky one.
Yeah, I try. Really, I do. I really liked her, and I think she will be a good coach. I think she just probably needs to grow a little bit more and have that experience a little bit more. Vlatko, in something you mentioned that he mentioned in the press conference, was the day-to-day stuff. My biggest concern with him going to the national team was that he didn't have the players on a constant basis and to make them better. Because I would watch him with FCKC, could watch him with the Kansas City Comets in the indoor league, and players would just get better every little bit here and there, and they would just get better throughout the entire year. The team would be playing at their best at the end of the year. And that was because he would continuously coach them to be a little bit better on everything they're doing. And I was afraid that with a national team, you can't do that because you only have players for a week or 2 weeks or a month at the most. And you can't change their habits in that time. You can't make them much, a whole lot better. You can tiny little things here and there. And I would watch national team players leave FCKC playing really, really well, go to the national team and regress. And when they come back, and all of a sudden they were just making stupid runs again until about 2 weeks later and back into practice, and they were kind of back into doing the form. I'm not going to name names there. So I do think that that's really going to be a strength for him, and with back with a club team.
Yeah, I agree. And I think at the national team level, and something I've learned as a broadcaster and just covering the sport the past few years, is your role as a coach with the national team, you're really not even a coach or a manager. You're just corralling good talent and then using the short period of time that you have 5 to 6 times a year to make sure that talent's good for the Olympics, the World Cup, and what other important tournaments they have coming up. So it's a very difficult position to be in. You have to be a good people person and be able to reach out to people often. And I think him in Kansas City having, 22 league games consistently, being able to work with these players in and out. But I will say the caveat for that too is it'll be really interesting to see how he manages this team in 24. Can he get them on the right track? And if he doesn't, that's where I think you have the leg to stand on. Is he, the coach that he was prior?
And it could have just been that at the early part of the NWSL history, it wasn't a
Right.
great league.
Totally. I mean, absolutely. I think, you look back at when he was successful. I mean, this league looked so different in 2018, 2019, really the early days, the amount of talent that they were bringing in. I mean, there was no international players coming. There was no, like, outside of Dabinia, really, there was no Caroline or anything. So I think the talent level, who he's going to be coaching against, is going to be drastically different for him. And that is probably going to be one of his biggest hurdles, I think, this season.
Yeah, I think the talent. I think you're right on the talent level. I do think that there was a lot of good coaches back in the early NWSL days. A lot of terrible people, though.
Yeah, there
Well, I
definitely
don't.
was a lot of terrible people.
Well, if I say there were good coaches, I don't want people to get the wrong mis you know the wrong idea
Right.
there. I'm not saying there were good people because obviously there were some people that were horrible. So as he takes over, he's going to have a new young player. Player's not even turned 16 yet. Alex Pfeiffer, she'll turn 16 like this month, I think. He'll have a chance to develop her. Michelle Cooper, Alexis Banstra, who turned, I mean, at the end of the season was, a shining light on the team. Scored a great goal, made some great plays. He'll have a couple of international center backs. We don't know what the team's going to look like because how everything's going to turn out over the off season with expansion drafts and free agency and stuff, but they'll have a lot of talent to work with.
Yeah, I think Ananovsky is walking into a situation where players are now coming back from the injuries that they sustained in the 23 season, and they're able to work and they're able to kind of come together and do more than just off the field, team building type stuff. And I mean, you mentioned Spanstra. She was the 10th overall pick in 23. She was a bright talent for Kansas City, and it's clear that she still has that. But it's now that Ananovsky is getting a hold of her, now that she's in a system that has a consistent coach, there's consistent people kind of in her brain. I think that's the hardest thing for some of these young players coming into the NWSL is having to handle not only an extremely long season, but the trades and getting new teammates and getting new coaching staff. Now that this Kansas City team has some of their key players kind of locked in, hopefully, I mean, the expansion draft could change everything. I think this is a good position for him to be in with some of these players. But yeah, no, I agree. I think Spancho was great towards the end of the year. Mace is a great consistent leader, somebody you can bet on. Elizabeth Ball being back as an anchor. A lot of bright talent. Hopefully we get to see Desiree Scott at the beginning of 24 too. I would assume we would, but you never know.
Yeah, I don't know. She's a free agent, and having
She
been
is.
injured all year, I'm not sure what their plans are for her are. But she's always a great locker room person, no matter how much she's actually contributing on the field. So that's a benefit to bringing her back one way or the other. But again, you don't never know what new teams might be wanting also.
You don't know what other teams want. You also don't know what Kansas City wants. Like, even though this was technically Matt Potter's team before Ananovsky took this over, they do have different soccer brains. I think Potter, like you'd mentioned, wanted to be transitional. He wanted to be, he wanted to be a coach who really played the ball on the ground. But I also think there was a little bit of like pockets and holes within their style that didn't fit some of the players. So I think with Ananovsky, it'll be interesting to see what type of players he's looking to recruit now that he's back in the day-to-day system. Because we haven't seen him technically recruit talent since 2019 outside of national team. So what is that style he's going to want to play now that he's out of this U.S. soccer system?
And with the U.S., he wanted the best players. He wanted the players who could do all the attacking stuff, the Katerina Macarios and Rose Lavelles. Unfortunately, they were either hurt and couldn't be there, or were hurt and weren't at their best. It will be very interesting. And because coaches are notorious for coming in saying, we want to do this, this, and this, and then they don't really do that. I don't think that's the case for Vlaco, but it was so frustrating when Matt Potter came in. Oh, we want to reflect the city. Well, what does that mean for your style? Well, we want to reflect the hard work of the city. I haven't heard a coach say that before. Yeah.
Coach speak. And I don't think Ananofsky is that guy. And no. You kind of mentioned, like, how do they want to play? And is the coach going to get players to reflect that? Ananofsky seems to have a really good relationship with Chris and Angie Long, and they clearly wanted him. I'm sure everybody in the league wanted him, but they really wanted him. And he's familiar with Kansas City. Like, he wants to have a more successful career in Kansas City probably than anybody else wants him to have a successful, career in Kansas City. So he's going to be able to go to, I think, Chris and Angie Long and be like, this is the player I want. No, how can we go about this? How can we execute it? And I think that's something really special that Kansas City might have up on different ownership, head coaching relationship across the league. Like, you don't really hear about ownership getting involved and having a relationship with the head coaches more than I hear the Longs being outspoken on social media and with Ananofsky.
Yeah, they are used to getting what they want. So
yes,
they wanted Vlaco.
And they'll spend the cash.
Yes.
Yeah, it's clear and evident.
I think Vlaco probably got a very good contract. I'm not privy to that, obviously, but I think he probably got a very good contract.
I know. I want to see that. I want to see all these contracts. Like player contracts, coaches contracts. I think that would bring such an extra level to how you and I see the game, and how you and I could kind of, in these types of podcasts, like, just break down this player, Joe Smith, is getting paid $40,000 and playing lights out. And I don't know, Alex Morgan is getting paid $250,000 and she's not. Like, why aren't we? That's where I think if we knew this kind of stuff, like in the NFL, for example, it would be so much more fun, we could compare and figure out, what's really going on.
With the MLS, the Players Association actually puts out the salaries twice a year, midseason and at the end of the season. And it is actually the biggest views, hits on our site of any article. That's the one that gets referred to the most, that people read it and they refer back to it. And it will generate hits until the next one's out.
That's crazy. Yeah, see what I mean, though? Like, and people are probably looking at that who maybe aren't big MLS fans, and then they're like, okay, this guy gets paid that?
Yeah.
Oh, I have to go watch him play. I think the same thing for NWSL. Like, Dabinia gets paid that? Oh, she must be good. We got to go see her,
Then it's also like, oh, that rookie is only getting paid X, and now they're starting over top of the person who's making five times as much or 10 times as much.
Oh, I know. It's the money behind it all. I think, I get it to an extent. You don't want to make it all about the money, but it's a professional league, and these players, I think, do get paid well. And it would be really fun to see kind of the breakdown of it all, especially get to the middle of the season. There's injuries. Who kind of is able to step up and be that big player? And how much are they getting paid? And what kind of bonuses do they get after what they put out in the pitch the year prior?
I do hope the NWSL gets to that level where they are doing that. I don't have faith it's going to happen anytime soon, but I do hope they do. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, to credit the NWSL, though, I think we've mentioned the bad coaching or the bad people, so to speak, from years prior and the stuff that has come out about the league years ago now. And I think the league has done a great job, and credit to Jessica Bierman, who's really changed how this league is being perceived, how they're kind of marketing themselves, the good play on the field, the fields that they're playing on, the standards that they've set for locker rooms, for coaches, for GMs, for stuff you've never really seen in women's soccer here in the States. And if they can continue to grow that ceiling and make it be, what we hope it all can be in the States, I think they're going to continue to get some of those players from Europe who want to come over here in the summer and have a different experience.
No, I totally agree. And again, credit to NWSL from where they've come from in 2013 to now is leaps and bounds faster than what MLS did it. I mean, they have kind of MLS as a little bit of a roadmap of something they can follow, but don't have to follow it exactly. But it, and just the explosion of soccer across America. I mean, the NWSL, MLS, USL, different levels in USL, academies, which I think is the next big thing that the NWSL really has to focus on, is developing academies so that they can develop players at 16 and not 24. Mm-hmm. But that's just it's amazing. And I'm loving watching the amount of soccer we have.
I know, it is really fun. And you mentioned the academies. I go back and forth on that one, to be honest, because I love the college game. Like, I think there's nothing like, and not just the college game, but the college experience. I went to Penn State, and I would never trade my experience for anything. Like, I loved, obviously, the team, what I learned about the game, how I've grown to love the game and my knowledge for the sport. But my experiences at Penn State, like, I learned how to grow up. I learned how to live with other people. I've learned how to make certain meals that I wanted to eat. I learned how to be a journalist. I went to football games and covered those. I went to baseball games and covered those. Like, I became a better journalist because I wasn't just going to cover soccer. And I think you take that away, it'll be interesting to see. And I don't think it'll ever be fully taken away, but no, it could be taken away and made very different if these academy players and these homegrown players just go straight to the league. There's just nothing like college to me. I just like, even the NIL deal, and we don't have to dive into that, but that's changed the college game. And it's a bummer. Honestly, to me, it's a bummer because I think college is so pure and should always stay so pure.
I on one hand, I agree with you. On the other hand, I'm selfish and I want the soccer players to develop faster. So
I know
it's, you know, and I do watch it from the on the men's side, the academy players. You're going to see less and less guys coming out of the college to go into the MLS draft. They just expanded it to now down to sophomores for MLS draft. And that's just going to change. And there's more players, like I'm watching 17-year-olds that play like a professional that wouldn't have 10 years ago.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
it really is. Like, I've been calling MLS Next Pro this past summer, and it's the amount of talent is crazy. And being able to speak to these coaches and how each team has a different approach. We want to create individuals. We don't want to create a team effort. And then some clubs where we want to create a really solid team, and then the individuals will either blossom into what we're creating, or maybe they're a better fit for another club in MLS. I agree. I mean, there's so many ways to slice it. And I think it's different for everyone. Like, each individual is going to have a different experience, whether that's college or having to go to Next Pro or do whatever the NWSL will develop down the road. But I think the college game is so fun, and you learn so much about yourself at that age that you go straight to the professional game and it's just not the same. You're hanging out with people in their 30s, their late 20s. You're having to grow up faster. You're traveling a lot. That's a lot for a young person to do and isn't always right for everyone.
And again, I'm not really going to disagree, but I do think we're signing players that are 16 now to, you know, professional contracts. It would be better if they could be in an academy to kind of have that growth where they're more with their own age group or a similar age group, and then, you know, develop to a like an MLS Next Pro where you'll have mostly younger players. You know, you'll have a few older players, but you'll still have kind of that experience. I know it's not the same as college, but you'll still have a peer group experience where it won't be as, I got a 30-year-old telling me what to do.
Right. No, that's fair. And also, too, these 16-year-olds being able to train with the best, right? Like, you go to a college, you might not fit that system, and then you're stuck. And on top of that, you're having to go to school. Like, you look at Mallory Pugh or Lindsay Horan and going overseas right away, not going to college. It worked out for them. But I think if you continue to lean into that a little too hard, I think it's just a fine line, to be honest. There's a fine line of kids who need to go to college. Don't discipline them for that, and kids who can go straight pro.
And you'll still see people coming out of college because they will be late bloomers. They will develop their game. They will find some mental strength or maturity, and they will still come out regardless of how this ends up.
Yeah. I mean, there's still late bloomers in the league too, right? Yep. Like there's so many young players who throughout Challenge Cup really stuck out and they're 24, 25 years old. Didn't have that when they were right out of it when they were 22, but being able to show what they can do later on in their career, I think is important too.
Fully agree. I think we only got like 3 or 4 minutes left before we have to quit. What's your thoughts on NWSL? On the playoffs?
Final? Yeah. Oh, the playoffs. Yeah. So the semifinals are this weekend. I think, well, we got the first one's Portland against Gotham. You just don't go to Portland and crush and honestly win. I think Portland's only lost 3 games at home this season. Gotham and Portland, I think their front five look exactly the same. Both sides are extremely healthy. Portland has the consistent back line. Gotham doesn't. And I think that's going to be Gotham's biggest Achilles heel. Portland will win.
So Portland 3-1. What do you think?
Yeah, 3-1. That's a good scoreline. I'll go with that.
San Diego and the Rain.
Rain have beat San Diego 4 times this year. I think Rain can get a 5th one. I just think they have this like firepower underneath them. Credit to Casey Stoney and Alex Morgan and Jaden Shaw and the amount of talent, Danielle Cole Prico in the midfield. But OL Rain seems to be on a level that they haven't been able to get to this year. I think they're peaking at the right time.
Okay. So I'm going to go with San Diego over the Rain.
That's fair.
And so Portland, San Diego in the final or Portland and the Rain in the final. Who wins the Portland and the Rain in the final?
Gosh, Portland and Rain in the final. I think I'll be safe and say Portland because OL Rain towards the end of all their seasons, they just kind of go downhill. And I think Portland, even though they've had their rough time against Angel City, they're going to pull through. I trust those players more than I trust the Rain players. What about Wave? You think they can clinch their first title?
I will lean towards them if they make it. Yes. I hate to in a way, but at the same time, I don't really have anybody I'm pulling for in those last four. So,
but like San Diego in San Diego would be so cool. Like, They draw the coolest crowd. I moved from San Diego. I lived right down the street from Snapdragon. And the constant crowds that they got, like, that would be so fun. So I'm personally kind of cheering for San Diego because I've been there this past year and seen it more up in person than any other club. But I just think Rain has it over them.
Yeah. I think it would be a great story, though.
It would be a great story. Absolutely. And I think there's some redemption for like Alex Morgan, honestly, like not getting the World Cup that she wanted. I see that fire in her for wanting a title this year, but you could say the same thing for Megan Rapinoe, right? Like this is her final year, didn't get the World Cup. She wants a trophy and this is it for her.
That is it. All right. We will get back together and see which one of us was right. And
yes,
honestly, probably we're both wrong. It'll probably be Gotham, but yeah.
Oh my gosh. Go Allie Krieger. She's my fellow Penn Stater. I'll cheer for her all day long.
You know, if I was going to root for a team, it would actually probably be Gotham in this case. Just for a lot of reasons. But I don't think they'll make it. But I would root for them of the last four remaining. So
I know. I love Juan Carlos Amoros. I think he's done a great job. Great coach. Great guy. Yeah. Easy to talk to. But we'll see.
I think a lot of people didn't think they were going to be this good. And all of a sudden they were. So.
Well, what they did last year to be able to turn it around like this, I wouldn't have predicted it either. But that's what we love about the NWSL, right? Like, you can never predict what is happening. And it's great.
That's sports in general and NWSL in specific.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That is true.
All right. Before we lose our time here, do you want to say, like, how anybody should follow you or listen to you or...
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at Anna Witte, WITTE. On Twitter, I'm at Anna Witte _. I'm on TikTok with the same _ handle. And you can listen to my podcast, too. It's at Straight From The Pitch at SFTP Pod.
Cool.
Thanks.
I appreciate you coming on. I always love to talk to you. And let's get together again in a couple of weeks and just talk more, a little bit more in WSL and maybe a little more expansion draft and who might be protected or not.
Yes, I would love that. Thank you so much for having me on. This was great.
And we are out.